So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13. Further talks between King Rahugana and Jada Bharata. Verse 7. Surahita swakvachaham nirvanna chaitaham Sochan vimukhyan upayati tasmalam Sochan vimukhyan upayati kasmalam Vachiskandharva puram pravishtah Vachiskandharva puram pravishtah Nirvritvan Mahurtam Pramodate Nirvritvan Mahurtam Suherita Swaham Kvachaha Nirvanna Chetaha
Suherita Swaham Kvachaha
Nirvanna Chetaha Sochan Upayati Kashmalam Vachishchagandharva puram pravishtah Pramodate nirvritvam muhurtam
Surai
By very powerful enemies
Ritasuha
All of those possessions
have been stolen
Vacha
Sometimes.
Nirvinna Chetaha.
Very morose.
And aggrieved at heart. Sochan.
Deeply lamenting.
Vimukhya. Becoming bewildered. Upayati. Achieves. Kashmalam. Unconscious.
Unconsciousness.
Kvachit.
Sometimes.
Cha. Also, Gandharva Puram, an imaginary city in the forest.
Pravishta,
having entered.
Pramodate,
he enjoys. Nirvritta Vat, exactly like the person who has achieved success.
Muhurtam,
for a moment only. Translation in Bhagavad by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Sometimes being defeated or plundered by a superior powerful agent, a living entity loses all his possessions. He then becomes very morose and lamenting their loss, he sometimes becomes unconscious. Sometimes he imagines a great palatial city in which he desires to live happily with his family members and riches. He thinks himself fully satisfied if this is possible, but such so-called happiness continues only for a moment. Please repeat.
Sometimes
being defeated
or plundered by a superior,
powerful agent,
a living entity
loses all his possessions.
He then becomes very morose.
And lamenting their loss.
He sometimes becomes unconscious.
Sometimes he imagines a great palatial city.
In which he desires to live happily with his family members and riches.
He thinks himself fully satisfied if this is possible, but such so-called happiness
continues only for a moment.
Purport. The word Gandharva Puranam is very significant in this verse. Sometimes in the forest a very big castle appears, and this is called a castle in the air. Actually, this castle does not exist anywhere but in one's imagination. This is called Gandharva Pura. In the material forest, the conditioned soul sometimes contemplates great castles and skyscrapers, and he wastes his energy for such things, hoping to live in them very peacefully with his family forever. However, the laws of nature do not allow this. When he enters such castle, he temporarily thinks that he is very happy, even though his happiness is impermanent. His happiness may last for a few years, but because the owner of the castle has to leave the castle at the time of death, everything is eventually lost. This is the way of worldly transactions. Such happiness is described by Vidyapati as the happiness one derives upon seeing a drop of water in the desert. The desert is heated by scorching sunshine, and if we want to reduce the desert temperature, we need huge amounts of water, millions and millions of gallons. What effect will one drop have? Water certainly has value, but one drop of water cannot reduce the heat of the desert. In this material world, everyone is ambitious, but the heat is very scorching. What will an imaginary castle in the air do to help? Srila Vidyapati has therefore sung Tatala Saikhyate Vari Bindu Sama Sutamita Ramani Samajan. The happiness of family life, friends and society is compared to a drop of water in the scorching desert. The entire material world is busy trying to attain happiness because happiness is the prerogative of the living being. Unfortunately, due to falling in contact with the material world, the living entity simply struggles for existence. Even if one becomes happy for a while, a very powerful enemy may plunder everything. There are many instances in which big businessmen suddenly become paupers in the street. Yet, the nature of material existence is such that foolish people are attracted to these transactions and they forget the real business of self-realization. Om Agnanati Nirandashe Gyananjana Salata Chakshurunditam Yena Tashmai Shri Guru Namo Shri Chaitanya Mahavishtam Sthapitam Yena Buddhaye Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandiram Shri Guru Shri Tapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavascha Shri Rupam Sahadrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalitam Shri Vishakam Vitam Sya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Tanta Radha Tanta Namaskata Tatta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranami Hari Priya Vancha Kalpataro Vishya Kripa Sindhu Vecha Patitam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namo Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Suvasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are reading here this pastime of Maharaj Raghuganayan Jagbharata. This has been going on for so many weeks now. And after Jagbharata is instructing Maharaj Raghuganayan, now in this chapter he is beginning with an allegorical story. He is pleased. In the last chapter we heard at the end of this last chapter we heard how Maharaj Raghuganayan surrendered on to Jagbharata, and Jagbharata had instructed him on various different topics. And in this chapter, Jagbharata is now explaining an allegorical story. And it's interesting, the story, when I was reading through the story, this allegorical story, and we know from different, even Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his song, Bulia Tumhare, is explaining life of a living entity or human being how he takes birth, grows, plays with other kids, then starts working, gets married, becomes attached, and then finally he dies. So he's explaining, so similarly this allegorical story is of a living entity or human being who is going through the forest of going through the material forest of enjoyment. So, and when we read this story, even though this was mentioned ages before, but it's still relevant today, and this is the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whenever you read, in whatever age you read, it is relevant because it speaks directly to a living entity. Whoever approaches Srimad Bhagavatam with sincerity will get knowledge, will get realization from it. It's interesting, the whole chapter is up to 19 verse of this chapter. Jarvarat is explaining this allegorical story of a person going through the material forest of enjoyment. And in the next chapter, Parikshit Maharaj is asking Sukhdev Goswami to explain the meaning of this story. And then Sukhdev Goswami is explaining verse by verse the meaning of what's going on in this chapter. So, we'll just go through few of the verses which were covered in this chapter. I won't go through the entire chapter because then our speakers who are going to speak tomorrow will have that portion I won't cover. We'll just cover up to today's verse. And so, in the first verse, Jagrat is explaining how a merchant is going through the forest, enters the forest with his goods to sell the goods and make some money out of it, profit out of it. And Sukhdev Goswami is explaining this is the life of a conditioned soul. And today's verse is very fits, and Prabhupada makes this point that each and every living entity is seeking for happiness. He wants happiness. He wants to derive happiness out of his existence in each and everything. So Sukhdev Goswami explains the same thing, how a conditioned soul, as it was explained in the first verse, goes through this forest, material forest, for enjoyment. And then what happens? There are six plunderers who plunders, second verse explains, plunders this misguided merchant. He gets lost into this forest, and there are six plunderers. Who are the six plunderers? The senses, the six senses. So the six senses, and especially the word mentioned by Sukhdev Goswami in next chapter is the uncontrolled senses. So when the senses are uncontrolled, the plunder, they are like the thieves who plunder the misguided merchant who is a conditioned soul. And then there are jackals. It was explained in the second verse. Jackals who plunder the inattentive merchants. And these jackals are none other than the family members or relatives or friends who plunder the wealth of this merchant. This person, conditioned soul, tries, works very hard in this material world to earn and save. But then the jackals come and plunder all this wealth. And then he goes through the dense boars composed of thicket of bushes, grass and creepers. So it is mentioned that this ashram, grahastha ashram, is like this dense boars where the person just enters. It's like, as Prahlad Maharaj explains, it's antakupam. It's a dense dark well where one just gets lost. And many times we see like it's very difficult. Once one gets into the grahastha ashram, it is very easy to become entangled into it. And it's very difficult to come out of it. Even if you want to come out, not of the grahastha ashram, but just to practice, to give time more to the spiritual life, it's very difficult. It's not so easy. One becomes more and more entangled into the activities of the grahastha ashram. So then it is mentioned, in this bovas he is always disturbed by biting mosquitoes. So there are always people, low class people, it is mentioned that they are always biting mosquitoes. I'm sure many of you have got these examples. So Adi Bhautik miseries. There are people who are like biting mosquitoes, who always disturb his existence. They don't allow him to live peacefully in this material world. And then it is explained, sometimes he sees imaginary palaces, Gandharvapura, as it is explained in this verse. Gandharvapura means there's something which does not exist. It's kalpnik. It's in his mind he imagines, if I become rich, if I have this, then I will practice spirituality. If I only have this much of saving in my bank balance, then I will practice spirituality. Or so he imagines things of different Gandharvapuram in his mind. He has a false vision, and then he it's explained in third verse that sometimes he is bewildered by seeing glowing ghosts. And Sukadeva Goswami explains this glowing ghosts are nothing but gold. So it's after collecting wealth. So this wealth is like the glowing ghost. Why? And it's very nicely explained. It's like a ghost because it's really, he does not own anything. And this we see today more than any time before, that people collect wealth. People collect all this currency, which we call, or even nowadays, Bitcoin. It does not exist in paper also now. At least before it used to exist in paper. In the olden days it was in gold. Then it was paper, at least it had some value. But now it's Bitcoin, it's all virtual. It does not even exist. It's just numbers in computer. And if you forget your key or password or something, it's all vapor. It's gone. So this is how, and this very much what Jarabharata is explaining, ghost. It's like ghost. All this wealth is like ghosts. It's very relevant in today's world. It does not exist. It's virtual. And Sukadeva Goswami is explaining it's like the gold. And then in fourth verse, Jarabharata is explaining how he's always using his intelligence in search of success. How he can become successful in this material forest. So imagine if we are into the material forest, into the forest which is dense, which is covered with bushes. You are lost in the forest. And many times we hear in the news, people in Australia, they get lost in forest. And some of them are not even found, and some of them are found after weeks or months. So what can you do? What formula can you apply in the forest which is covered with dense earth? You don't know the way, you are lost in that. So it's like a, Jarabharata is explaining, it's like a whirlwind. So sometimes he gets attracted by his eyes to the opposite sex and then gets entangled into that. And sometimes he acquires water and he runs after the, to acquire water he runs after the mirage. So Jarabharata is explaining, Sukadeva Goswami is explaining in the next chapter, like this is all like trying to acquire material success, trying to get some happiness out of material things. But he's continuously been feared. He's hearing the sounds of owls and invisible crickets. So it's like the government servants. They are continuously sending him tax invoices, bills. So all those things, he's continuously been tortured by the government servants and enemies. And then it is mentioned, mentions that sometimes he takes shelter of impious trees who have no fruits or flowers. So Sukadeva Goswami is explaining in the next chapter that these impious trees are wealthy people of this material world. So they are just engaged in, they've got wealth, and so the material conditioned soul, he tries to get influence, tries to become friends with them so that he can become rich. But they are like trees who don't have fruits or flowers. He does not go to the saintly person, he goes to the influential people. So then it is explained in the sixth verse, he jumps into the shallow river, which we heard yesterday. So he jumps into the shallow river, and Sukadeva Goswami is explaining that it is like approaching the athis or pseudo gurus, so which are very shallow. They don't have any depth or substance in them. So by achieving someone who is athis or who is a false guru, one is not going to make any advancement. So then we come to today's verse, where it is mentioned that he becomes, sometimes he imagines a palatial city. He enters it with his family and enjoys for a moment as if fully satisfied. So he's continuously dreaming of some happiness which does not exist. So we see, and because of that, he's always continuously fearful. Everyone is just fearful in the material world. Everyone is trying to, and we see right from, and we see more in lower species, like we see outside there are sparrows. They are continuously, after every grain they pick up, they look here and there. They are always fearful of someone will be killing. Our pigeons are different because they've got a lot of trust in the devotees. But outside, yes, there is fear for everything. So in the material world, everyone is fearful of everyone else. And this fear comes from, where does this fear come from? Anyone? Where does the fear come from? Attachments. So the more one is attached to things, possessions, the more he will be fearful of losing those things. So there is a nice story, actually I heard long back, of King Bhartrahari. And this King Bhartrahari, it's an interesting story, was an elder brother of King Vikramaditya. And we know King Vikramaditya is famous, like he was very powerful. And same this King Bhartrahari was also very powerful. And he was ruling in Ujjain. So this king was famous for not only his rule, but he was famous for his vyakaran, grammar also. He was a very eloquent poet. And there are many, he has written satakas. Satakas means 100 verses. So first he wrote satakas in, when he was a king, he wrote niti sataka. Niti sataka means how one should rule on politics. He wrote 100 verses, which are so powerful. And there are many Western scholars who have studied this and wrote commentary and books on those things. So this king had a very beautiful wife, and he loved his wife so much that he wrote another sataka, which is Shringara sataka. In love of his wife, he wrote 100 verses, and those, even though there is a commentary on those verses as well. So because of his grammar and the way how he wrote this poem, he was very famous. And but he was devotional at heart as well. So he tried to get out of this family life, but he was not, as it is explained in this verse today. When one is entangled into the material forest, it's very difficult for him to come out. So this king was trying hard to come out of the material, but because of his attachment to his wife, he was not able to do that. So one of the sages are naturally compassionate to the living entity. So one of the sage went to this king and gave him a ring and told this king that whomever you love the most, give this ring to that person. And naturally the king was attached to his wife, beautiful wife, so queen. So he gave this ring to the queen and told how the sage had come and told this that whomever you are attached to most, you should give this ring to that person. So the queen took the ring and then she gave it to the commander-in-chief, because she was attached to the commander-in-chief. And this commander-in-chief eventually gave this ring to a prostitute. And then eventually that prostitute came back to this king and gave this ring to the king, because the prostitute was attached to the king. So when the king saw this ring coming back to him, he understood what the... See, he was intelligent, he was a scholar, right? So he understood what is going on. He gave it to the queen, and queen must have given it to someone who had given it to someone, and like this it has come to him. So he wrote another sataka, Vairagya Satakam. So imagine, he was so depressed, and even in that depression he wrote beautiful 100 verses poetry. This is different to the condition of people these days. If they are depressed or they fail in love or something like that, they will jump over the bridge. They will commit suicide. But here the king was intelligent and he renounced everything and he wrote Sataka, Vairagya Satakam. And there is one beautiful verse from that Sataka, Vairagya Satakam, which is relevant to today's verse. It is mentioned, Bhoge Roga Bhayam, Kule Chuti Bhayam, Vite Nriplat Bhayam, Mane Dainya Bhayam, Bale Ribu Bhayam, Rupe Jaraya Bhayam, Sastre Vadi Bhayam, गुणे खल भयम खाय कृतना काय कृतना कृतयात भयम सर्वम वस्तु भयम भूवि नृपम वैराग्यम एव भयम. So what does it mean? In enjoyment, when one is enjoying, one is always fearful of losing that enjoyment. When one is going through good times, he is always fearful of disease. So one has got a healthy body, he is always fearful of disease. So it's bhoge roga bhayam. And we know many people who work throughout their life, they struggle throughout their life. Example, Steve Jobs, right? He struggled. If you read his life history, biography, it is mentioned throughout his life he struggled. And when there was time when he was successful, he had everything on his with him, like he was one of the topmost richest men. But what happened? He had to leave the body. So he had disease and he had to leave, he had cancer. So bhoge, so one when he's enjoying, he is always fearful of disease. And then it is mentioned kula chita chuti bhayam. The family reputation, there is always fear of falling down. This is more seen in India, like I know many people, many of my friends who wanted to marry someone, and then there is Brahmin. They are Brahmin, the other is Brahmin, but they are lower Brahmin and we are higher Brahmin. So you can't marry. So there is always, parents are always objecting. Even Brahmin, there are lower and higher Brahmins. So parents always object, like, because you cannot marry a lower Brahmin, the girl's parents are saying. So there is always kule, shuti, bhayam. So family reputation, one always, who is born in the higher family, he is always worried about his reputation. And then it is mentioned, vite, nripalat, bhayam, wealth, there is fear of king and government officials. One who is wealthy is always trying to avoid tax. How can he? Because the government is always trying to tax him more and more. The more wealthy you are, the more tax you have to pay. So what the people who are wealthy, they will do? They will go to the accountant and ask him, is there any way we can avoid tax? And if the accountant cannot help, they will change to another accountant, or they will change to someone else. They will do some means by which they can avoid tax. So this is Vite Nirbalad Bhayam. They are always been harassed by the government officials, by the government and the king. And then it is mentioned, Manu Dainya Bhayam. In prestige, there is always fear of humiliation, Pratishta. And this is one of the big things. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami mentions in Manasiksha, Drishta Swapacho Ramani Pratishthasa. So one has to be very careful of this Pratishta or pride, because it is compared to the audacious dog-eating outcast woman. So Raghunath Das Goswami in Manasiksha compares it to the prostitute. So one has to be very careful of this Pratishta. And the persons who are having pride in the heart, they are always fearful of being humiliated. And then it is mentioned, Balin Ripu Bhayam. One who is powerful is always fear of another powerful person. Especially the kings in the olden days, they used to always fear of another kings. Before they become powerful, they used to fight. And now we see this today also. All the governments are fighting among themselves. There is, we are already on the brink of World War III. So they are saying Russia is crossing the borders of Ukraine, and they have already lined up their forces. China is putting the navy into the China Sea. And so the whole world is moving in this direction where there is a war coming up. So power, there is fear of enemy. So, and then it is mentioned, Rupe Jaraya Bhayam. In beauty, there is fear of old age. Each and every one enemy. This is very, when you go into the supermarket, the sales of cosmetics is increasing, and food is decreasing. So there are more shelves which is having medicines and what are those? Tablets, vitamins, proteins, protein powders, and all those things is increasing. in cosmetic industry, all those things are increasing, and the food lanes, the fruit and vegetable lanes are decreasing. So this is, everyone wants to remain young and beautiful. And then it is mentioned, Sastre Vadi Bhayam, in scriptural erudition, there is a fear of learned opponents. Everyone who is like, and we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, there was a person called Keshav Kashmiri. He used to go and defeat everyone. He was so proud of his knowledge, he used to go and defeat everyone. But we know the past time that how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just, when he wrote 100 verses in glorification of Mother Ganges, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just went and just took one verse and just disassembled it and proved that how he is wrong. Just by just putting even grammar, he did not even go into the verse, just by he found grammatical faults in the verse, and then he again established that that verse was right. And Keshav Kashmir was completely bewildered. How is this possible? That even some, he just naturally composed 100 verses. How is it that this boy can remember that verse? So he then understood. Mother Saraswati came into his dream and told who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. So then he could understand. But he, the point is, like he was always fearful of opponents. So he was going in different cities, towns and cities, and trying to defeat and establish his virtue. So, and then it is mentioned, Gune Khala Bhayam. Those who are virtuous, those who are pious, they are always they are always fearful of wicked people. And then it is mentioned, Kai Kirtana Kirtantyar Bhayam. Person who is having a body is always fearful of death. So, and this we know, each and every one, and today's verse explains very nicely how each and everyone is just trying to be happy in this body, trying to improve his material condition so that he can enjoy in this body. Whereas devotees, we read from Srimad Bhagavatam, they don't worry about their bodies. Especially Dhruva Maharaj, he stepped on death and just entered into the aeroplane. And we know Narad Muni, there was only flesh. He didn't, he just changed his body without even noticing. So the devotees don't worry about, and this is explained very nicely in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is mentioning how during the day if you leave their body, how during the night you leave the body, it's a different thing. Waxing moon, waning moon, during Uttarayana and Dakshinayana you leave the body, the results are different. But finally Krishna explains that for a devotee it doesn't matter. The devotee is not worried about daytime or night time, Uttarayana or Dakshinayana or whatever time. It's always auspicious. He will come to meet Krishna says. So, and finally in this verse it is mentioned that Sarvam Vastu Bhayan Vitam Bhuvi Nirnam Vairagyam Eva Bhayam. So Vairagya or detachment is the only one which bestows fearlessness. So very nice verse. Bhartahari, King Bhartahari has mentioned in his Sataka, and which today's verse it is mentioned, sometimes being defeated or plundered by superior powerful agent, a living entity loses all his possessions. He becomes very morose and lamenting their loss. He sometimes becomes unconscious. Sometimes he imagines a great palatial city in which he desires to live happily with his family members and riches. He thinks himself fully satisfied if this is possible. But such a so-called happiness continues only for a moment. So, every living entity, and the life of a living entity can be explained in three, as it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Dehinosmi yathadeh kaumaram yavanam jara. So, the life of a living entity can be explained in just boy to youth to old age. Each and everyone goes through these three things, and further it explains there are six stages. One is born, one grows, one sustains, produces byproducts, dwindles, old age, and death. So we can elaborate these three, boyhood, youth, old age, to the six stages. Or we can go further, and as it is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 3rd canto, Kapila Muni explains how the soul enters into the womb of a mother, karmana devena netrena jantur deho pada. So by his own karma and the material nature is entering into the body of his force, actually is forced into the body of a womb of a mother just by his karma and deva netrena, devi shakti. So material nature and his karmic reactions, he is forced into the body of a mother, and then he grows into the womb, and the whole development of the cycle is explained by Kapila Muni, how he grows, how his ears are developed, how the fetus develops different limbs of the body, and as it is explained in third canto as well as in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's poem Bhuliya Tumhare. In the seventh month he gets consciousness, and in that he remembers the Lord. Some of them who are fortunate enough, they remember the Lord and they pray to the Lord, saying, "My Lord, please remove," because he's going through so much of suffering in that womb. Bhishan Bandham, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned, it's such a tight situation, is in this bag where he's been tightly held, and there are insects and bacteria and all this acidic juice which is just torturing him. And then he's praying in the seventh month when he has got consciousness, he's praying to the Lord, "Please deliver me from this. Please liberate me from this bondage, and I'll promise I'll remember you." But what happens when he takes birth? He forgets everything. Because the relief of coming out of the womb is so much that he forgets. And Prabhupada makes the point here that in material world there is no happiness. It's only relief from the misery. It's only because one becomes relief of some disease, one thinks he is happy now. But really, he was in the miserable situation, he has just come out of the miserable situation. And that is the only thing in this material world. So one cannot think that he is happy in the material world. And then what happens? When he comes into this material world, he's been surrounded by all these family members, friends, who he becomes the center of attraction. Everyone is surrounding him, bringing him gifts, making him making him think that he is the center, is the source of enjoyment. Everyone is giving him whatever he wants. So he becomes bewildered by this thing. And when he grows in this situation, he tries to enjoy the material world through his friends and family members. He plays around. He goes for education. He takes some education. Then he goes and works. He works in the material world. He earns money. Then he gets married. He has children. And he tries to get happiness, extract happiness from those family and friends and children. But then old age comes in. When he gets old, he becomes diseased and he dies. So this is the cycle of each and every one in this material world. When we see around, nobody is escaping. There are some details are different. One may sleep on a bigger bed, king-size bed, or a double-sized bed. So those details might change. One may live in a big house or a small house. Some details change. But at the end, we see in the material world, each and everyone is going through this cycle of just trying to seek happiness within this material world. And Prabhupada has explained, the happiness of family life, friends and society is compared to the drop of water in the scorching desert. So one, how much, and Prabhupada is explaining this, the entire material world is busy trying to attain happiness because happiness is a prerogative of the living entity. How much, if you are in a desert, how much a drop of water can help you or satisfy you? It's not possible. And Krishna also mentions, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna how in material world the biggest or the topmost living entity is Lord Brahma, Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartina Arjuna. He's saying, and then in the 8th chapter is explaining how the life of Brahma is explaining. One kalpa is like 1000 yuga cycles, 4.32 million years multiplied by 1000, it's 4.32 billion years. It's just one day of Brahma, and same is the night of Brahma, and like that Brahma lives for 100 years. And so Krishna is explaining how this Brahma, who is the topmost living entity, lives for such a long life, but still from that, from him to the lowest insect, who lives only for a night or even some of them for a moment. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Jana, they have to go through the cycle of birth and death. And so Krishna is explaining that don't become bewildered by this. Devi Heshi Gunamayi Mama Mahaduratya. It's very difficult to get out of this ocean of material suffering. And so don't become bewildered of this material energy. Just come, Mama Pedatu Kanta Punarjanmana Vidyate. Just come to me and surrender on to me, and you don't have to come back again to this material world. And finally, I will give an example of a castle of cards, as it is mentioned, Gandharvapuram. So, Gandharvapuram means that palace which does not exist. It's in the mind. I am not sure, some of you might have seen, there was a serial in India, Mungeri Lal Ke Haseen Sapne. Anyone remembers? That serial, Mungeri Lal Ke Haseen, there was a person named Mungeri Lal. He was a poor person working in an office, had a wife, I'm not sure what children were there or not. But he had a habit of dreaming. Wherever he was standing, he used to dream of either becoming rich or some of the other dreams came to him. So, and finally what happens? That dream, at the end of the serial, the dream breaks and he is back into that position where he was. It's like this, as it is mentioned, Gandharvapuram, everyone is trying to dream of something which does not exist. And 11th canto, Kesha Prabhu is teaching 11th canto in that, at the end, in the 28th and 29th chapter, which are like, the 28th chapter is more like Gnana Yoga. And Krishna is mentioning to Uddhava in Uddhava Gita. Krishna is saying that everything that you see here is just illusion. Whatever is happening is all illusion. Finally, he's just concluding this before he's explaining the bhakti in 29th chapter. So he's saying everything is illusion. Nothing exists basically. And so whatever is going on is false. So similarly, Gandharvapuram, everyone is trying to build something or make something, but at the end, what is going to happen? It will be destroyed, it will be taken away from him. And he is to start again from zero. Nothing will exist. And nicely, Prabhupada was explaining yesterday how there will always be sufficient for a person if he is dependent on the Lord. So one may think, I have to keep something for myself, I have to build some assets, I have to have some bank balance, then I'll be satisfied. But Lord will provide sufficient for everyone. One does not have to work hard for it. One can, whatever comes up as per its own accord or karmic creation, it's okay, but one should not put in a lot of endeavor in working hard for something which is already will be provided for him. And so this is like Mungeri Lal. We all are living like Mungeri Lal, who are dreaming of something, building a castle. But then it's going to be taken away, it's going to be wiped off, and we'll come back into our real position. And it's like building a castle of cards. We all in our childhood must have built a castle of cards, right? You arrange the cards in such a way that you can build on one on top of the other. What happens after a while? There is slight wind or somebody just moves, and that slight wind just breaks the entire castle and it falls down. So Acharya has mentioned this material world is like that. It's like whatever work, however hard we work, at the end of our life, it will be all taken away. It's like building a castle of cards. Okay, I'll stop here. If there are any questions or comments or corrections, please. Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
You said that there are many blessings in Bhagavad Gita. So,
some of the lessons that you can learn from Srimad Bhagavatam. So, there are many lessons which one can learn from Srimad Bhagavatam. What are some of them? And so, the most important lesson that one can learn from Srimad Bhagavatam is the life of all the devotees, the prema bhakti. How one can love God. So this is the one of the most essential lessons. And the devotees mention different ways how one can approach God. But the main lesson that one can learn at the end of Srimad Bhagavatam is how to love God, how to surrender to God. So this is just one of the lessons. But this is the ultimate lesson that Srimad Bhagavatam gives. Prema. And there are 10 subject matters, right? Atra sarga, visarga, sasthanam, posham, uthaya, manvantara, eshanupada, nirodha, mukte, ashraya. So the 10 subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam, but the topmost or the most important subject matter is ashraya. How you can take shelter of the Lord. Ultimately, that's the most important lesson Srimad Bhagavatam teaches. Taking shelter of the Lord to love God. Thank you. Nice question.
Hi Krishna Prabhu, we were mentioning how the soul goes into the womb and then develops through their karma, that which, you know, body they get or where they go is because of their karma. Is it also because of the parents' karma as well? Does that affect the child?
Right. So it's usually the living entity's karma that he gets the suitable parents because it's his desire. And I was reading this chapter, this and the next chapter, and at the end of in the 18-19 verse, Jagabharata is saying that a living entity acts like a monkey. So what happens if you act like a monkey? You get a body of a monkey, and to get a body of a monkey you have to have a monkey parents. So it's not monkey parents' karma that you are born into them, but it's your desire, your karmic reactions, or your the way you live your life, that you are born to a monkey parents. And so usually the whole karmic reactions is not only, it's a joint karma, but it's ultimately you, the way you act. If you have acted like a pious person or a devotee, then you will be born into a devotee family. But if you act like, as it is explained, Jagabharata is explaining, if you act like a monkey, then you will be born in a monkey family. So ultimately it's your karma, it's not parents' karma.
But throughout your life, do your parents' karma affect at all? Or?
It definitely affects, and each and everyone has got a choice. Even though, yeah, your parents might be acting in a one particular way, but you always have an individual freedom. So if you act on those choices, then it's up to you what you want to be.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hare Krishna. Guruji, as you mentioned, and also Prabhupada quotes that there is no one can be happy in this material world. And in 9.2 we learn that it's also common to one another. So one is blissful by performing this. So how can one reach from that stage to that stage?
Yeah, so Susukum Kartum Abhyayam, as it is mentioned there, it's for the devotees. What we are talking about generally is for the people who are not devotionally inclined. But of course, the characteristic of bhakti is Kleshagni Subhada. As soon as one starts the process of sadhana bhakti, this too starts to manifest. Subhada, auspiciousness starts to manifest. And then one of the things which happens is Sudurlabha Moksha Labhukrit Sandarananda Visheshatma and Sri Krishna Akashani. So one comes to the Sandarananda Visheshatma platform eventually. But that process starts to manifest as soon as one starts the process of bhakti. So the whole point is we have to perform sadhana, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. And when we start that process, automatically when we come to the platform of Raghavanga Bhakti, so this is the journey from Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti to Raghavanga Sadhana Bhakti and following the footsteps of Ragatmika Bhaktas. And then we see, like, eventually we get the taste. And when you get the taste for performing devotional service, that gives immense happiness. Because now you are, the example is given that when one associates with a drunkard, what will happen? He will start drinking. And when you become drunk, what happens? You basically lose sense control and all those things. So when you associate with the Supreme Lord and His devotees, automatically you acquire the quality. It's like fire. When you are entering into the fire, you acquire the quality of a fire. So similarly, Lord and His devotees are like fire. When you associate with them, you automatically acquire, and one of the qualities of Lord and His devotees is they are always in bliss. And we acquire that qualities, we acquire those, we automatically become blissful. Prabhu, you had a question?
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Wonderful class and very, very nice answers to the questions. Now, you had mentioned and touched upon during the presentation about Bhartahari Maharaj's solution to the problem of fear. And the solution he proposed is detachment.
Right.
The Vaishnava outlook is detachment alone makes the heart.
Yes.
So, what would be the Vaishnava solution to the problem of fear?
Yeah, so our solution is not just detachment. So, Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg. So, what Bhartahari Maharaj is giving is Nivritti Marg, where you completely become detached, and which is obvious because he has gone through such a big trauma of completely putting his faith into something which he understood was just making card castles, right? It never existed. Gandharva Puram. So, he is totally just writing on Vairagya. That is why his name is Vairagya Satak. So, of course, our position is not just detachment. Our position is bhakti. So, when we perform bhakti, Vairagya and Jnana automatically follows. So, all we have to do is surrender on to the Lord. We don't have to work hard. I mean, in 8th chapter, Krishna is explaining how a devotee can perform Satchakra Yoga. You can perform all this austerity and all, and you come to the platform. Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining. So, how we can perform Satchakra Yoga and raise his Kundalini Shakti and perform all this austerity, detachment. And he said, when one becomes completely detached, he does not have any tinge of material sense gratification, and he performs this yoga, Satchakra Yoga, he comes to me. But then ultimately, Krishna is saying, but then if you perform bhakti, which is su sukham kartum abhyayam, which is joyfully performed. So if one performs bhakti, one does not have to go through this exercise of hard work. So our process is not detachment, our process is Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg combined. We engage our senses into the Rishikena Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. So that is our process. We engage, we don't become like a tortoise who withdraws, we are like tortoise who withdraws his senses as soon as there is sense enjoyment, but we again engage our senses. It brings out his senses as soon as there is no danger. So this is our process, both Pravritti and Nivritti Marg together. We engage our senses in the service of the Lord, and by which we enjoy, at the same time we advance in spiritual life. Thank you for bringing out that point. I did not bring out that point clearly. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. Guruji has discussed that you said 11th canto, it's mentioned that everything is an illusion. And we know that everything comes to an end. It has to come to an end one day. So what could be the proper reason or udhikan, you know, for one to engage in work or engage in activities?
Right. So, Rupa Goswami is saying that Yukta Vairagyam Uchyate. The right, proper, and this is explained in ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita as well. I mentioned canto before, right? I think. Ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, again, Krishna is explaining. It's not detachment that we are interested in. We are interested in, and Prabhupada mentioned in those purports, where we are interested in Yukta Vairagyam, engaging everything, and there is one level of becoming detached of everything. The second level of engaging things, Karma Yoga explains, engaging everything in the service of the Lord. But the highest level is seeing everything in relationship to the Lord. So, the Yukta Vairagya principle is understanding that what I am working, it's not for me, it's for Krishna. Krishna has provided me a service, and then I'll work for it. Krishna has given me a family. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, this family is yours. So, Krishna has given me a family. I will look after this family as if I am looking after devotees. I'll take prasadam. So whatever yad karoshi, yad nasi, yad juosi, dadasi, yad tapasasi, kondaya tat kurushwa, mad arpanam. Krishna is saying whatever you do, whatever you give away. So whatever activities we do, we have to take it as an offering to the Lord. If we consider in that way, suppose like brahmacharis are working in the temple, they don't consider that they are doing something materialistic work. Right? They think that they are working for Krishna. So similarly, as a grahastha, we have to look into our lives as each and every activity dedicated to the Lord. How can I please the Lord by this activity? And that activity immediately becomes devotional service. Because the fruits, the whole point is the fruits of those activities. Of course, we try to use it for looking after our family, house, car, all those things. But at the same time, we have to make sure that some or majority, to whatever extent we have been given, we have to engage it in the service of the devotees and Lord. So that is the whole point. If we are just miserly and use everything for our satisfaction, then it's sense gratification. But the whole point is, if you are working for Krishna, this is one of the things. There was one devotee who was going to give up his job, and he went to his spiritual master and asked him, I'm planning to give up my job and just do devotional service full time. And because that devotee and guru, his spiritual master, knew that condition of this devotee, he said, no, what you do is, you keep working, but whatever you earn, just give everything to the temple. That is full devotional service. So that is Yukta Vairagya. Be whatever activity you are doing, you do that, but as an offering to the Lord. So no point, because the spiritual master understood that if that devotee would have given up job, he would not be able to, because of his mindset, he would not be able to engage in reading, chanting and devotional activity. Better is he continues his job because he is good at it and give everything to the temple or the service of the Lord. And that way he becomes completely purified. There is no difference between that person who is engaging all his resources in service of the Lord and a brahmachari or sannyasi. And Prabhupada makes this point. He's a person who is a grahastha and engaging all his resources in the service of the Lord is better than a sannyasi. So Prabhupada is giving that comparison in this chapter.
Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jaya.